Hello and welcome back to the Audio DT with Reb T, the Audio Dvar Torah with Reb T, the show where we talk about the Parsha of the week with some practical lessons to keep. This week we're talking with the help of the sources from Chabad.org, the wonderful website. We're looking at Kisavo. We are looking at Perek Chavav Pasuk Bet. In Sefer Devarim, Parshas Kisavo, in the second pasuk, it says it's talking about the Bikurim, and the pasuk says, "V'lakachta mereishis kol pri ha'adama asher tavi me'artzecha." You shall take of the first of all the fruit of the land, and of course you should bring it to Hashem. And then there's that whole passage about Rami Ovid Avi, which we see in the Haggadah, talking about the whole experience coming to this point, bringing the fruits to Hashem. But we should pause and press the pause button and understand, why do we do this? Why do we go out to our fields? Let's say you're a farm or a landowner. You have these fruits. You have all of these things you're planting. You have to give truma. You have to give miser. Then you have to give trumas miser. And then it's miser ani. All these different things you have to give. And then you also have to give bikurim. You also have to take care of orlam and laket shechachapeo. All these tons of different things to help out everyone around you. But then the Bikurim itself, you have to bring to Hashem, and it has to be of the first of the fruit. The question is why? Why can't we wait a few weeks? Why can't we wait a few months? Maybe let everything come to fruition. Maybe let's make a profit, and then let's give tzedakah, and then bring it to Hashem. Why do we have to do it, first of all, right away, right at the beginning? So Rashi picks up on it right away, and it says, of the first, but not of all the first, because not all fruits are subject to the mitzvah of first fruits. Only the seven species for which the land of Israel is noted, the Shivataminim. Here in our verse, in this pasuk, it says the word Eretz, land. And there, in the verse describing the praise of Eretz Yisrael of Israel, it says a land, Eretz, of wheat, barley, you know, it vines and figs and pomegranates, a land of oil producing olives and honey, Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, and it talks about the Chita, the Seora, all those different things that Eretz Yisrael is known for. Just as the earlier verse, the earlier Pasuk, is referring to the seven species through which Israel is praised, through Eretz Yisrael is praised, here too, the verse is dealing with the praise of the land. Rashi proceeds to explain two expressions in Devarim, Chet Chet, which are relevant to the mitzvah of first fruits in light of the connection taught by our rabbis above. Oil producing olives refers to agure olives, see Sifri, meaning superior quality, like the Pasuk talks about the first fruits. We want to give the first to Hashem, hopefully the most superior quality, olives that retain their oil, keeping it gathered, agur, as it were, inside it. Hence, it is the superior fruits which must be brought here. And in the same verse in Deuteronomy, it also says honey, that is the honey of dates, bringing to mind the idea that first of all, we want to bring to Hashem the food, the fruit, the really good fruit that the land of Israel is known for. We don't want to give them some random fakakta plant or some random very esoteric thing that's coming from the middle of your field. It wants to be one of the fruits that the land of Israel is known for, the produce that the land of Israel is known for, and it should be superior quality. The first point to keep in mind here on the DT, we want to make sure that it is great quality and it is superior for Hashem himself. It's also interesting to think about the idea that Israel itself, Eretz Israel, is known for some things, known for some types of fruits. I remember my years studying in yeshiva and thinking how awesome all the products of Israel were. We used to jump down and run down to the makolet after shir and in yeshiva, and we would get all these different fruits, and the fruits were really tasty, really good. And I remember taking a pomegranate and taking it to shear and cutting it open and going through the entire pomegranate throughout the shear, and how tasty and how juicy it was. Even the ones here in Chutz La'aretz, they don't compare, because Eretz Yisrael is known for their different fruits, known for their different foods, and even their dairy. I say this to my wife a lot, and in general, throughout the years, I really felt like the dairy there was of a different quality than the dairy here, and it was a whole experience having the dairy there. I remember back in the days when we were in yeshiva years ago, they had the shoko basakit, and they had the chalava sakit. There was the milk in the bag. You had to like take this type of different item, and you had to cut it open, and then you didn't have it, you didn't want to cut it open too much because then it would spill all over the place. You had to put it in like this milk container. For some reason, they didn't believe in the cardboard boxes that America has over here. They used to have it in the plastic. And also the Shalkov Sakit we would take all the time. We were on different Tulim, different trips in Yeshiva, and we would go and run over to the store on a little break, and we would get those Shalkov Sakit, and the concept seems strange. It seems weird to drink it out of the plastic bag, but you should know that in my mind, to me, it tasted far superior to any chocolate milk I have here in America. Their dairy in Israel, the way they make it with Tnuva and the other brands or whatever, just tasted delicious, tasted superior. You felt the cream of the land, you felt the in the product, you felt the Eretz Zavat Chalav Devash in the product. And that's the point here. Hashem wants us to give to Him those things, to appreciate what He gave to us in the land, what's superior in the land, and bring it back to Him. We want to make sure that it's given back to Him, and we want to give those things that are of the superior quality, give those things to Hashem, that which He blesses you Himself within the land that He gave you. If He gives you the wealth, He gives you the produce, He gives you the land, He gives you the products, give back to Him right away those products that are of superior quality in the land itself. Hence, Israel is known for these items. It's so interesting. I could only get some things in Israel, and you could only experience some things in Israel, not just the food itself, but there's a whole series of only in Israel experiences that happen only in Israel, different occurrences that happen only in Israel, different feelings that you only get in Israel. And we talk about these different stories all the time, and throughout the years I talk about the stories of different Shabbat experiences I had that you could only feel it in Israel, and something that happened that you could only explain that it happened in Israel. I remember my wife telling me a story about when she was on a Shabbos experience and something happened that was only in Israel. You feel part and parcel of the family of the Jewish people there. And when you go there, you have these experiences and all these different columns of different stories, how it's one big unit, one big family there. Different experiences of feelings, and not just the food and not just materialism, but spirituality and emotions and connectedness that also only happens in Israel. So many times, especially in my years in yeshiva, I would go somewhere purposefully not knowing who the people would be for Shabbos, and I felt this very interesting, exciting experience. I wasn't worried, I was excited, because there was a program called Anywhere in Israel. I don't know if it's around anymore, but you would choose a place you wanted to go to. They would hook you up with a family. You didn't know them from before. It was strangers. I would take a friend with me. We would go on a bus or a shirut or a taxi, whatever, and to get there, and we showed up, and it didn't feel awkward, because everyone there was open. In the land of Israel, it had this experience that there was a connectedness only in Israel, and we were able to have such a wonderful experience, because Israel is known that this is where the Jewish people are supposed to be, and this is where we're supposed to live. It's Achdut, and it's unity, and you could go anywhere through this program. You could go anywhere you like, and you don't feel like a stranger. You feel like it's another home. Just wonderful experiences to have, living the experience, breathing Hashem's land and air. Every dalet amos there is a mitzvah. So if you're in quarantine in Israel, living to us, every 8 steps or so you take, depending on the amah measurement, if the foot or foot and a half, every time you're walking around your house, you're getting a mitzvah. So don't worry about being in quarantine. You're getting a mitzvah, all those steps you take. And that's the first point, thinking about the idea of why we're talking about the first fruits and what we can learn from it, the fine quality and the fine experience of living, especially in Israel. But Rashi also picks up and talks about the idea that it says, of the first of all the fruit. What is the process of taking these fruits? A man goes down into his field, sees that a fig has ripened. He winds a reed around it for a sign and declares, this is the first fruit. This is the Bikurim. He goes amongst his field. He understands that Hashem blessed him with this field, blessed him with this undertaking, and bless him with this experience of having the field. Not everybody has the capability and the ability to do the field. Think about the idea of Shemitah and Yovel in the biblical times also, and throughout the years, having that land, having that produce, having that experience, and having that be what you cultivate, and then taking a year off, really understands for us and really points out for us that really Hashem above is who's in charge. We're not in charge. We just try to put in the work, but really Hashem is the one. So the person has to go into his field, has to understand that all these things were planted, but really it comes about through Hashem. Hashem puts in the reward through the effort of the farmer, through the effort of the vintner, if it's a vineyard, and the effort of anyone involved in the toil, and has to realize that once it finally ripens, he goes and he tries to declare it. He tries to take it upon himself that this is what's going to be donated. This is what's going to be given. And the point here for me to bring over to you is that we should make sure to right away set aside things for Hashem. We shouldn't procrastinate about it. We shouldn't wait for later. Do today instead of pushing off for tomorrow. Don't push off for tomorrow what could be done today, I believe is the famous quote. Carpe diem, seizing the day, taking what you have today. Don't say, I will do it tomorrow. Maybe you won't have time tomorrow. Pirkei Avos says, do it today. Who knows if you'll have the time tomorrow? Yeah, I'll learn tomorrow. Yeah, I'll do this tomorrow. Yeah, I'll get around to it. Maybe you'll never get around to it. Maybe you'll just get too busy. How many times in life, there's so many people that are regretful of so many things. No one ever says after 120 years, I wish I had more time making money. I wish I had more time working. I wish I had more houses. I wish I had more cars. What do you think people say? It's a very solemn thing. It's a very solemn thing, and it's a very grounding thing and a very down-to-earth thing to speak to people who are much older than us, much wiser than us, that have much more years under their belts. And you talk to them and you ask them, how was their life? What did they learn in their life? What do they wish they could do more of? What do they regret? People don't ever regret anything materialistic. They only regret that which is spiritual or that which they could have done more. People say, I wish that I married earlier, or I wish I tried to have kids earlier, or I wish that I did more for the world. I wish I gave more money. I gave more time. I wish I did this or that. Things that they wanted to do to enhance the generations, to enhance the world around us. But nobody ever says, I wish I had more time for more money. That's a wasteful life. That's someone who's running after things that'll never come with them. The only thing that comes with us after 120 years, besides for hopefully the children we leave and the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren after us, is the Keter Shem Tov Ola Agabeim. You know, there's the Keser Malchus, there's the Keser Kahuna, and there's the Keser Torah, excuse me, but the Keser Shem Tov, that good name, the mitzvos, the chesed, the opportunities and the impact you made on other people through teaching with them, working with them, and trying to make a positive impact, that's what lasts after this world. And it all starts with taking advantage and the moment of every day starting today. If you do things now, you don't push it off, you seize the opportunity when you have it, and you start it right away, that is a way to get about it, because Pirkei Avos literally says, if you don't learn today, if you don't start today, if you don't move today, it may very well not happen tomorrow, because you might not ever have the time. How many people had all these things they wanted to start, and they waited for years and years, and then they just left this world without having done what they wanted to do, without initiating the project? If you have that idea, I talk about this all the time on all of our shows, if you have an idea, you have an innovation, you have a concept or something you want to bring to fruition, you must do it, because without you, it'll be lost. After 120 years, it'll be gone. I just mentioned this today to my wife. After 120 years, any idea, any movement, any show, anything we created, if we don't figure out a way for it to be posterity to after us, for it to last after us, the idea literally dies with us. God forbid. We should all live 120 years. Mashiach should come. But if we don't bring it to fruition, if we don't carry it over, we don't give it longevity after us, then it will stop with us. And that shouldn't be. It should be for generations. You initiate a movement. You think about the Dafyomi starter, Rav Meir Shapiro. What a brilliant idea. The idea did not stop with him. The idea was born with him. The idea initiated with him, but he made it into a self-sufficient cycle. It's not dependent on any one person. It's not dependent on any one Gemara. It's dependent on the person themselves taking the initiative to do it every day. That's a concept that lives for longevity. He starts the idea. His first fruit was bringing to fruition this idea of the Daf Yomi, which never existed beforehand. But Rav Meir Shapiro said, I have this idea. I'm not going to let it die with me, God forbid. I'm going to bring it up at the Aguda Convention 100 and so years ago. And since that, there have been countless cycles. And it's an idea that keeps on going and keeps on going because he initiated it, but it didn't stop with him. So you have to set things aside. You have to do it now. You have to start now. The first fruits of your labor should start right away. Seize the day. Don't let it be gone. Don't let it be lost. If you start today, do whatever you can. Perkyelvis talks about how it's upon us to start. It's not upon us to finish, but we have to at least start. Lo alecha hamlacham ligmor. It's not upon you to finish. You start the concept. You initiate the concept. Velo ata ben chorin lehiba tel mimana, Perkyelvis tells us. You are not able to just move away from it. You're not able to say you're nullified from it. Don't say that it's too much for me. It's too hard for me. I can't make sure that it'll extend. Who knows how many things will be? Who knows if it'll even continue? Who knows if it'll take hold? I could have said that with any of the shows that Hashem put on our minds, but Hashem gave us the idea. We had to initiate it. Who knows where it'll go? Who knows if it'll reach anyone? In the beginning, I didn't know where it would go. Who knows if we'll have enough information or context or words? But derech she'adam rotza leilech bom malichan otof. If you have that idea, we talk about this all the time, but it always bears repeating. You have the idea. You have the concept. You must start it. Pirkei Avos says you have to start it. You're not mechoyv to complete whatever the idea is, but bring it to fruition. You're not able to nullify yourself against it. You're not able to walk away from an idea. It would be a sin almost not to bring it. You have that idea and you don't bring it to fruition, nobody will ever know from it. Nobody will have benefited from it. People could have been saved. People could have been helped. You have an idea for an app that could save lives. If you don't do it, you're literally withholding the idea to help people and save lives. You have an idea for a show, for a book, for a writing, for a concept, anything that could help people, anything that could bring a little light into their lives, a little humor into their lives, or a little extra oomph to their lives. That's things that should be done. Just says we have to pick up the bikurim, we have to start right away giving Hashem the fruits that we see ripen right away in our own lives. Any concept, any idea, we have to bring it to fruition right away. Bring it to mind right away the second we get it. Don't let it wither over time, because any fruit, if we don't give it to Hashem right away, that first fruit, that first beautiful juicy grape or juicy orange and the zest for it will be great, and it's such a covet to give it to Hashem. If we waited a few weeks, a few months, it could have shriveled away, it could have died, it could have lost its luster. So too with any idea in mind, if you don't tackle it right away, you don't seize on the passion and the idea and the newness right away, then it's going to wither away. You're going to lose that passion, you lose that idea. If something comes to your mind, an idea comes to your mind, take out your notes app, take out your paper and pencil and write it down right away. Also, things are put into your mind for a second. Hashem can spark the innovation, can spark the insight in your mind, but if you don't write it down, it could be lost forever. That's why a lot of times if anything comes to mind for any shiur or any concept or anything I have to do, I try to write down the note right away, try to text it to myself or to my wife, I try to put a reminder in my phone, any way to keep that idea so we don't lose it. Something that comes right away, something new, something first, something that's the first thing, we have to put it in our mind. We have to make sure it's not lost. Seize on it right away. Set it aside right away. Don't procrastinate. It won't stay for you. It could be lost forever. We don't want that to be, which is our second point. The Chabad points out that the Rambam says also, the idea of the Bikurim, the idea of the first fruits, is that everything that is for the sake of Hashem should be of the best and the most beautiful. When one builds a shul, when one builds a Beis Knesses, a house of prayer, it should be more beautiful than his own dwelling. How often, unfortunately, do we see a shul that's decrepit, a shul in need of such repair, but the same guy that's on the board of the shul, the same president, the same CEO of the shul, if there is such a thing, the people on the board have such luxurious houses, such beautiful houses, beautiful properties. It feels like such a dichotomy. It feels like you're pulling at the opposite ends. Your house itself is beautiful, 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 but the shul is standing decrepit. What a disgrace, what a dishonor for Hashem. You know who picked up on this many, many years ago? David HaMelech himself. He was sitting in his own house, and he said, how could I sit in this house, this luxury, this beautiful house, while Hashem's Aron sits in a tent? This is not honor for Hashem. This is not a Kiddush Hashem. This is not kavod for Hashem and for the Torah. I want to build a bias for Hashem. I want to build a beautiful house for Hashem. Please let me do this, Hashem. He has this idea. What does he do? He doesn't wait till 2 o'clock the next day. He seizes it. He seizes the opportunity. He seizes the idea right away. And he wants to build it. And he's already going to get zestful. And he's so driven by the idea that he's about to start it. That's why Hashem sends Nasan Hanavi, I believe, or maybe God. I think it was Nasan Hanavi. Sends him literally in the middle of the night. Go to David's house right now and talk to him. The obvious question is, why couldn't Nasan wait till 9 a.m.? Go have your business meeting with David HaMelech at 9 a.m. Why do you have to visit him at 2 in the morning? And I believe it's Rabbi Rosner who points out, because David HaMelech was someone that took action, that took the initiative and rolled with it. If he had an idea, he was not going to rest until he completed it. He was going to get the contractors, he was going to get the painters and the artisans and the craftsmen and find the shamir to hew the stones right away. He was going to work on it that second. If he did not send Nasan Hanavi, if Hashem didn't send Nasan that second, David would have already laid out the contracts, laid out the blueprints, found the architect, and started the building that second, because he took the concept. The first thing that came to his mind that Hashem needed the house, he seized on his own Bikurim idea to help Hashem, but Nasan said, I'm sorry, David. Hashem said, you can't build it. We love the concept, we love the idea, but there's just too much blood on your hands. There's too many wars that were fought during your day. Your son Shlomo will build the base of Mikdash, but what you could do is lay the groundwork. And that's what David did. He took all the gold, all the silver, and he probably made blueprints, and he probably left a whole architectural plan for his son Shlomo to make the base of Mikdash, because David had the idea and realized that if we are giving something to Hashem, it should be much more beautiful than anything we ourselves have. How could we live in a gorgeous, gorgeous mansion, but our shul is decrepit in a trailer? How could we live in a rolling expanse of thousands of acres? Halavai, we should all be zochah to have such big properties for all of us, but the shul should also be at least as beautiful as your house, if not Kavachomer, much more beautiful than your house in many ways, shapes, and forms. But we should make sure to contribute. You know, we don't have to give thousands of thousands if we don't have it. Well, we should contribute what we have. That's probably the idea of membership, how we're trying to upkeep the shul, help the shul, and give out to the shul, giving tzedakah to the shul and different things that the shul has, different programs to upkeep the beauty of the shul spiritually, physically, material, and ruchnius wise also. If you build that base kinesis, it should really be more beautiful than your own dwelling, the Rambam points out. When one feeds the hungry, he should feed the aniyim, feed the hungry of the best and sweetest of his table. I love the story. We should all strive for such a level. The story of a guy, not even a story, but just the idea of a guy comes to the door, and more than the money does for the poor person is when the guy brings him into his house and sits him at his table. He offers him something to eat. He offers him something to drink. And that does more for his body, more for his neshama, than any amount of money that the person could have given him, because he's showing him the respect. He's showing him the dignity. He's showing him what's really need to be taken. It's not just about the money, but he has hunger in his belly and hunger in his soul. He's probably downtrodden. He probably is very down on his luck, very down on the situations for whatever reason Hashem gave him. Maybe he was sent to the person's house in order to be given that chesed, and the person that sits him down and talks to him and is warm with him, gives him the smile, gives him the time of day, gives him the drink and the food, and also gives him the money, does much, much more than anyone else who just gives him the money. And also it's about the smile. This is something for myself to work on as well. When we're doing things, we should do it with a smile. You could give the bikurim, you could give the first fruits, but if you do it in a begrudging way, you do it in an angry way, it's not the same, and it's almost not as worth it as if you could have done it in the right way. The right way is to do it, and it's mussar for myself and many of our own actions. If you're asked to do something by a spouse, by a family member, by a friend, if you do it with a smile, it's much, much better than if you do it but with a begrudging way, with an angry way, or with a not happy way. We're supposed to do it with the smile. So someone who goes and brings his bikurim with a smile and is so happy and joyous of it, how do you think Hashem responds versus someone who gives the bikurim in a downtrodden way, in a nasty way, in a mean way, or in a begrudging manner? You're doing the same mitzvah, but you're not really doing the same mitzvah. It's the spirit of the law also, the spirit of the manner, putting yourself and your soul into the mitzvah, into doing it the right way. You're both doing the mitzvah, but you're not both doing it on the same level. It brings to mind the idea, we'll talk about it in a second, we'll come back to it, but it brings to mind the idea of Cain and Hevel. Why was one accepted and one not? One of the sons gave the best of their fruits, and Hashem accepted, and one gave some salad, some cabbage, some tomatoes, but the other one gave a beautiful offering, a beautiful carbon, or if they didn't have meat, he gave him the choicest fruits and the choicest vegetables, while the other one gave him the not so great quality. And maybe it was also how they went about it. Maybe one was really happy to do it and one was not. Giving the Bikurim is not just about giving the right fruit, the best fruit, but also in the best manner, with the best spirit and the best cheerfulness and the best attitude towards doing the mitzvah itself. If you're involved in different aspects of your life helping people, and you're involved in different aspects of your life with being good to help others, it's not just about the treatment, it's about the bedside manner. How many people, how many doctors, lawyers, therapists, teachers are out there who say that they're in the profession to help others? They say they want to help others, but they have a nasty demeanor. They have a nasty bedside manner. It makes me wonder why there's so many people that I've met in my own line of work who are in it, and they're supposed to be in it for the children, but really they're in it for themselves. They don't have that outlook. They don't have that warm demeanor, the warm outlook to interact with the staff and the kids. You say you're there to help the kids, but you do it in such a nasty, cold bedside manner. What does that really mean? Are you really helping the kids? Or what about a person you go to the hospital and the doctor has a really nasty bedside manner? He's in the profession supposedly to help people, but he's lacking the warmth, lacking the interaction, lacking the matter. There's so many ways to say something. Lo aleinu, we should never know from such things. We should all live 120 years. But if you have to tell someone they have a bad prognosis or the outlook doesn't look well, say it in a nice way. Say it in a comforting way. Why do people say you have 6 months to live? Lo aleinu, we should never know from such things. I understand you have to be realistic and you have to tell them that they don't have 100 years to live, but there must be a better way to say it. There must be a nicer way to say it. I just wanted to let you know, according to the current research, according to how your conditions and your situations look, we don't want to be too hopeful. We want to let you know that it seems there might be X amount of time, but we could always pray, we could always hope, and we could always look towards the future, and we should enjoy every single day. I don't want to tell you that there's only 6 months, but what we're looking at is X amount of time. There has to be a nicer, and that's not nearly the right way to say it. I'm just thinking out loud, but when they say you have 6 weeks to live, you have 6 months to live, lo aleinu, we should never know from such things, how devastating. If you just said it in a nicer manner, you just explained it in a more comforting manner, it still could be realistic, and it could still can be what you think the diagnosis and the prognosis should be, but the words you use should have a proper warm manner. They talk about you think about the idea of hospice. People could go to different places at the end of their life in 120 years. How you're treated in those last days can really affect how you leave this world. Tzaddikim leave this world as if a hair is plucked from milk. Why can't it be that anyone that's in pain, anyone that has only a few days to live, they could be feel that they're in a beautiful surrounding. They're dealing with people that talk to them and comfort them in the right way. You could go to two different places. One could be nasty and curt, and one could be warm and loving, and that's the way it should be. Halavai, for only good things. Allah has kama v'kama. Kama chomer should be for only good things. But every time we interact with people, we should be the first to initiate people, the first to talk to people with a smile. The way we talk to people, interact with people, we should be the first to talk to people. And when you talk to people, do you say it with a smile, or do you say it without a smile? And nowadays with the masks, of course, it's hard to always understand if they're using a smile or not. But we should do things in a beautiful way, especially for the sake of God. When we're giving things to Hashem, it should be in a beautiful manner. When you're feeding the hungry, it should be in a beautiful manner. When you interact with people, it should be in the right manner. If you're really out there to help people, make sure you help them not just with the actions, but with how you interact with them, how you talk to them. And when you clothe people who don't have clothing, clothe them with the finest of your clothing. All these clothing drives, they say that they take clothing in good condition, but how many of us give clothing that's actually in the best condition, actually in good condition? Do we give hand-me-downs that's been in the family for 15 years and has a couple of holes and rips that hopefully nobody will notice? Do we give shoes that have a couple of holes in the bottom that if they look over, they'll find it, but maybe they won't find it? When we're giving things away, realize that these are families that are down on their situation, that unfortunately Hashem gave them a very difficult situation. They don't have the clothing. They don't have the materials. They don't have the amenities. They need it just as much as you needed it. They need it in their life. They require it in their life as much as you did. So why would you give them anything less than best? Would you yourself use anything less than best? Would you take clothing from a 15th hand that's seen much, much better days, that has stains on it and whatnot? Make sure it's in really good condition. Make sure it's in really nice condition. Make sure that you feel comfortable giving it away. You're happy to give it away, and you're happy that it's in such good condition that hopefully it'll help people. And how wonderful these clothing drives are that help people, especially in Israel, but around the world, especially in the cold winter months when it's brutal out there and they have very difficult situations. But this clothing can help warm them. And not only does it warm their bodies, but it warms their hearts, especially when it's given from a wonderful place. A lot of times, a lot of kids give clothing, but if it's not in the right way, then it's a little begrudging and they might be unhappy about it. But it's a very easy fix. If the parents... The kids learn much more from what parents do than from what parents say. And I see that my own example with our own kids. They see from what you do. It's not do as I say, it's really do as I do. They really learn much more from what you do. If you involve yourself in a chesed-oriented life, we talked a lot about this on the message of chesed, the lecture that's on all podcast forums, the lecture series with Reb T. If you do as you do, and you have your kids follow in your footsteps by doing, if they see a chesed-oriented lifestyle, they see that you're cooking for other people, you're delivering for other people, you're checking in with other people, you're helping other people, you're giving away clothing with a smile, that's the best way for them to learn to do it with a smile also. If you give something away but you have a nasty look on your face, you're teaching your kids an opposite hypocritical reaction, a hypocritical action and reaction. You're giving something away, a beautiful mitzvah, but you're really angry about it. So what are the kids supposed to learn from it? They're going to see to do mitzvahs with a scowl. They're going to see that we shouldn't be happy about doing mitzvahs. If you do it with a smile, you're not only helping yourselves and helping the people that are receiving it, you're actually teaching and helping your children as well. So when you give things away, the finest things, the first things, it should always be with the smile. It's not just about giving the item, it's about giving the item with a smile and with Sameach Lev, with a happy heart and a full heart, happy to help others and full to do a wonderful mitzvah. And that's why you should clothe them not only with the finest of the clothing, but with the finest happy smile on your face over. And when you designate something for a holy purpose, the Rambam points out, you should sanctify the finest of his possessions. As it is written in Vayikra, the Sefer Vayikra, the choicest things should go to Hashem. So when we do things and we give things, especially the first things, it should be done to the best possible and highest extent possible as well. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe points out also on Chabad, the rule, the choices to Hashem applies in all areas of life. If the school day must include both sacred and secular studies, the former sacred should be scheduled for the morning hours when the mind is at its freshest and most receptive. This is something I didn't even realize, but so often throughout all my schooling of yeshiva years, it was very, very much common that the morning was Hebrew and the afternoon was English. And I never knew why, but it makes a lot of sense that the morning hours, especially for myself, when studying, especially in college and grad school, those hours like 9 to 1 were really the best for me always, and even now. Those are when the mind is at the freshest and most receptive. That's why the morning should be the sacred. That's why the morning should be when we learn the Torah studies, Navi, Parsha, Gemara, Mishnah, and the like. It should be when your mind is at the freshest and most receptive, not at 12 o'clock at night when you're falling asleep off of your chair. If one's talents are to be divided between two occupations, one whose primary function is to pay the bills, and a second which benefits his fellow man, he should devote his keenest abilities to the latter. He should devote his passion and his real abilities to when he could benefit his fellow man. Too often when we say, what do you do? We're really referring to the occupation. But what do you do really means, what are we doing to contribute a dollar amos to this existence of the world? What are we doing to better the world? We talked a lot about this on the lecture series of Chosen from Birth to Fix the Earth. What are we doing to fulfill our tafkid, our purpose, our mission in life? You have a love, you have a passion that if you didn't have to worry about time or money, you would run to do it. What do you love to do with your time? If you could do anything in the world, what would you do? The main question that I believe Sarah Yocheved Rigler and Aish.com asked to teach us how to find what we're supposed to do in this world and in our life of, God willing, 120 years, that's where your passion should go. That's where your energy should go. And for me, of course, the answer is the audio lectures and the audio shiurim and the podcast. I really love that. I put a lot of effort into it, even more than my actual day job, because the Rebbe explains you're supposed to put your effort, supposed to put your energies to where you could try to contribute a little bit to whatever Hashem shows you to try to do for this world. You're here to help the world. The world should become better for having known you. The world should be better off with having you in it. If the world is not, then we might have missed the mark, because there's only one of us now. There will never be another one of us, and there never was one of us beforehand. So obviously, we have a distinct function in our 120 years in this life. We shall be zoche. There's no one else like us. We are the only ones that could contribute exactly what we are supposed to do in these years on this earth. You are given your neshama, you're given your time, you're given your name and your special purpose. What is your purpose? What is your mission? When we bring our Bikurim, we realize this is what we're supposed to give to Hashem, but what are we supposed to give to the world? What are we supposed to do? We should get up, find what our own Bikurim within ourselves are, and capitalize on it right away. The second we see it ripening, the second we see it coming to life, the second we see that it's ready to be picked, we find those talents and we use them right away. We don't wait till we're 80 to figure out, oh man, I'm a really good writer. I could have wrote an amazing book to help a lot of people. You do that the second you figure out you can write. You realize you can speak, you trample on it the second you can. If you realize that you're a really good chef and you really love to cook in a restaurant, you could jump on that the second you figured out how to cook. Don't wait the 120 years for, God forbid, a missed opportunity. Use the talent to help your fellow man, to help the world around you. And the Rebbe also explains, in devoting the first ripened fruits of his life to Hashem, a person in effect is saying, here lies the focus of my existence. Quantitatively, this may represent but a small part of what I am and what I have, but the purpose of everything else I do and everything else that I possess is to enable this percentile of spirit to rise above my matter-clogged life. You have to use the finest of your skills, the finest of your talents as your fruits, your bikurim, to give to the world, to help to others, and to fix the world at life. If God gives you abilities, God gives you talents, how can you use them to help the world? Only use the finest aspects of your talents, the most ripened aspects of your talents, your bikurim, your talents to give to Hashem, to give to the world, to use in the service of Torah. God forbid, chas v'shalom, to use in the wrong ways. There's always good and evil ways to use your talents. You could do podcasts for good and podcasts for bad. You can write for good, you could write for bad. You could cook for good, you could cook for bad. Use it in the right way, in the proper way. Again, that's why maybe Cain and Hevel, one was accepted, one was not. One was done in the right way, with the right spirit, with the right type of fruits, and the other was not. The more rich the fruits we have, whether it's physical fruits or talents, we should use it right away, the first chance we can, the first of the Bikurim. Don't wait months, don't wait weeks, don't wait years, and don't wait a lifetime to lose it. We have to give it all the way. Don't go halfway. Go all the way. And think about first. Think about doing things first. There's a halacha in the Gemara. If you have a pet, who do you think should be fed first before yourself? And it's an actual halacha. You're supposed to feed your pet. It's because it's Tsar Bala Chaim, but also teaching the idea of chesed. Thinking selfless oriented, not selfish oriented. So many people are egocentric. What about me? What can you do for me? That's all the idea of the advertisements and the materialism and the cartoons and the commercials, excuse me. It's all about what can we sell for you to make you feel better? What are you missing in your life to make yourself feel better? But that's the wrong outlook. Bikurim teaches us to give to Hashem, to give outwards, to give to others. Be selfless oriented. Who are you going to feed first? Who are you going to give to first? Who are you going to take care of first? If I'm making dinner, the last person I should serve is myself. I should serve my wife and then my children, and then I could take care of myself. Make sure that everyone else is taken care of before yourself. You can eat whatever time. You know how to make food. You know how to cook food, but make sure everyone else is taken care of. That's how you give. The root of Ahava, Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler explains, one of my favorite chaps, the root of Ahava is Hav, because the root of love is to give. That's why the most bewildering relationship is parents to children. We love children so much, but when they're little, they can't give anything back to us. You know, they can't buy us anything back. They can't really make hearts for us when they're 2, 3, 4, 5. But when we give and we give and we give, that's the real love, because we're not expecting anything in return. Real relationships are not 50-50. It's when each person gives 100%. When the root is Hav, when the basis is Hav in Ahava, that's the best type of relationship to have. We want to make sure that we have the finest for everyone around us, including giving to our wives, giving to our children, giving to everyone around us. But of course, for Hashem himself, we want to have the best, the finest bikurim, the finest mitzvahs, the finest fruits, and the finest tashmishe kedusha, tashmishe mitzvah. We want to make sure that if we have our tzedakah, we give it in the nicest way possible. We give the most we can, but without feeling like we're giving too much. You give a tenth, try to give a little more than a tenth. You get that $1,000 check, give a little more than 100. You have the objects of mitzvah, make sure they're really beautiful and the finest things for Hashem. It's not just bikurim in the material fruit things, and it's not just in the qualities and the talents and abilities you have, but it's also in the items of mitzvah that you have, that you present and give to Hashem. It should be a beautiful lulav and esrog. It should be a beautiful menorah, as much as you could feel you could spend on it to have such a beautiful mitzvah. Beautiful Shabbos candlesticks. Don't get the choppy ones that are shmachi, that are only $10. Get a really nice, beautiful one. You're going to use it, God willing, every Shabbos of your marriage. God willing, 120 years. And each candlestick for each kid should be really beautiful ones. Beautiful candles, beautiful kiddush cups and challah boards, a beautiful tefillin set and talis, and a beautiful tzitzis, including beautiful talis bags. A lot of times people just put it in random plastic bags. Let it be a nice talis bag that could be embroidered. Mine has my name, thanks to my mom, really nice colors and Hebrew and English name. I feel very happy using those bags, because it's an accessory to the mitzvah, but it enhances the mitzvah. When you have a sukkah and a seder plate, your Shabbos dishes and silverware, beautiful stuff set aside for the mitzvah, even the kittel, a beautiful kittel and shofar and a megillah, and your svarim, getting beautiful svarim and keeping them in nice condition, because instead of writing a Torah, you could buy svarim, and if you keep it in such a way, you're presenting this sefer that you're learning Torah and enhancing your relationship to Hashem. It should be the finest thing you offer. If your sefer is crumbly and full of stains, that's not a beautiful thing to present to Hashem when you're doing the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And when you have your haplin and earn different things in your life, different aspects of your life that you're presenting and you're using, should all be done in the best way possible, in the finest way possible. And that could be the main lessons to learn from Bikurim. Why do we do it right away? Because we give ourselves to Hashem, to the mitzvahs, to the world, to each other right away. We pounce on the ideas, we pounce on the mitzvahs, and we pounce on any ability and any capability we have to those around us, hopefully bettering the world as much as we can, as soon as we can, the first second that things ripen, to give to those around us and hopefully make the world a better place, to enhance the world and bring Mashiach and the Beis Hamikdash speedily in our days. This has been the Audio DT with Reb T, and I'm your host, Reb T.